Good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 6th of January 2022, Thursday class. We will be continuing our sharing from this book, The Wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta. We are on page 97 of the text, the hard copy. Soft copy is page 55. Okay, just relax body and mind, maintain some form of a stable posture. Then we shut off the light and we can have our half an hour of awareness-based meditation. I will set the alarm now. So just relax, maintain awareness to stabilize the city of mindfulness within. Then use it to meditate. Then we will continue from where we started. Turn to page 97, The Wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta. We are at part 3, the translator. Translated by Tipitaka Master Kumarajiva of Yao Qing. Yao Qing was the name of the dynasty coexistent with the Qin dynasty, which was after the three kingdom period, San Guo and Yi. At the end of the Cao dynasty, there were 7 states. The state of Qin conquered the other 6 states, and the Qin dynasty was established by Qin Shi Huang, or Shi Huang Di. Later, it was overtaken by Han Emperor Cao Zhu, who started the Han dynasty. After the Han dynasty, during the Qin dynasty, some people still favored the Qin dynasty. So Fujian formed the Qin faction, which supported the descendants of Qin Emperor Shi Huang Di. He later established the Fuqing dynasty with its capital at Chang'an. In Chang'an, Fujian's court astrology has seen a wisdom star shining over India, and told Fujian, in India there is a person of great wisdom who shall be coming here to protect our country. Fujian said, it is most likely Kumarajiva. We should send our troop to bring him here. He then sent General Lu Guang with 70,000 mounted troops to Kuja after Kumarajiva. Kuja was an Indian kingdom situated on the border of the present-day Xinjiang province of China. Then we move on to the next section. Announcement of meeting to form the Sino-American Buddhist Association, name later changed to the Marine Buddhist Association. On the Chinese New Year this year, I announced that American Buddhism was going to bloom and bear fruits. This year's summer lectures session on the Surangama Sutta can be likened to a flower blooming. More than 20 people participated in the session, and I believe that every single one of them had changed a lot after studying the sutta. Now one of my disciples' father is planning to give us a piece of land on which to build a temple. So tonight we are going to form a Buddhist association and then proceed with this matter. Before Lu Guang arrived in Kucha, Kumarajiva had told the king, China is sending troops to our country, but they do not wish to take our land. They have another objective, and you should listen to them and agree to their demands. But the king refused to listen, and when Lu Kuang arrived, the king of Kucha sent out his troop to fight. The Chinese army was large and powerful, and Kucha was just a little country. The king was murdered and his troop defeated. As the king had been an ardent believer in Buddhism, you may wonder why he was murdered. It was because the killing karma he had created in past life was too heavy. It was a fixed, unavoidable retribution. Lu Kuang captured Kumarajiva and started back. When they reached Xiliang in China, which is in the vicinity of Yan'an and Xinjiang, he heard that Fu Qian had been murdered by Yao Chang, who had usurped the throne and set up the Yao Qin dynasty. Hearing that the government had changed hands, Lu Kuang set up camp in Xiliang, in the gorge, at the base of two mountains. Kumarajiva advised him not to camp there, saying, "This is a dangerous place to camp. In the event of a flood, the whole army might be drowned. What do you, a left home person, know about military matters?" Lu Kuang retorted, "Why don't you just mind your own business?" He ignored Kumarajiva's advice. In the middle of the night, a flood swept across down the gorge, and Lu Kuang lost several thousand men. The next day, he realized that Kumarajiva was really extraordinary, that he had spiritual power. Before the troop had drowned, he did not believe in him, but now he certainly did. Since Fu Qian had been murdered by Yao Chang, Lu Kuang decided to stay there, to stay where he was and not continue on to Chang'an. 2 years later, Yao Chang died and his son Yao Xing took the throne. Yao Xing knew that previously Fu Qian excuse me, had sent Lu Kuang to bring Dhamma Master Kumarajiva back. And so now he asked Lu Kuang to hand the Dhamma Master over. When Lu Kuang refused, Yao Xing sent troops to attack. Meanwhile, Lu Kuang had died, and his son Lu Long became the king. Yao Xing's troops defeated Lu Long and finally brought Dhamma Master Kumarajiva to Chang'an, where he devoted himself to the work of translating the sutra. And so Dhamma Master Kumarajiva had been captured and brought over. The translation of sutra is a massive project of incredible difficulties. Why did Lu Kuang go to capture Dhamma Master Kumarajiva? Why did Yao Xing send troops to receive him? It was because he was an eminently virtuous Dhamma master. Everyone looked up to and believed in him. That was why Yao Xing had him captured and taken to China, where he translated numerous sutras. This was the causes and condition of how Dhamma master Kumarajiva arrived in India. After Master Kumarajiva arrived in India, Yao Xing thought, "Dhamma Master Kumarajiva's wisdom is unsurpassed. If such a wise person were to leave no descendant, it would be a great pity." And so Yao Xing ordered Dhamma Master Kumarajiva to get married, giving him two beautiful palace girls to be his wife. He hoped Kumarajiva would have a wise son who would be heir to his knowledge. Kumarasiva had no way to refuse the king's order. He was forced to comply. What do you think happened after he complied with the king's wishes? At the time, there were over 800 monks in India assisting Dhamma master Kumarasiva to translate the sutta. Because although Kumarasiva was fluent in Sanskrit, he was not completely familiar with Chinese or Mandarin. Those 800 monks all viewed Dhamma master Kumarasiva with disdain. "You tell us not to go near women, saying that monks cannot have wives. But look at you," they say. At that time, the situation in China was similar to that in the United States now. Many people who call themselves Dhamma masters still sneak around. Kumarasiva had always advocated that monks could not have wives. But now he himself was married. This angered the other monks. "You are nothing but a talker," they said. "You have cheated us all along." They did not realize that he had been forced by circumstances to do what he did. One morning when monks went to breakfast, they each found a package of needles on their plate. Dhamma master Kumarasiva announced, "There is no food today, so we are going to eat needles. The monk looked at each other, and not one of them dared to eat the needles. They thought the Dhamma master had certainly gone crazy or mad. They were even angrier. "How can you expect us to eat needles?" they demanded. "You want us to eat needles? You eat them first." "Oh, so you can't eat them," said Kumarasiva. "Fine, bring them over to me." When the 800 monks' packages of needles were set in front of him, he opened them all and ate all of the needles as if they were noodles. The monks stared at him in amazement. "What's going on? Is this some kind of magician's trick?" they wonder. "Are those needles really edible?" After finishing off the needles, Kumarasiva said to them, "None of you could eat the needles. Let me tell you, if you can eat needles, you can get married. Otherwise, you can't. So whoever among you who wants to get married, come and eat a bag of needles first." The 800 monks realized they did not have that kind of spiritual skill. They no longer dared to look down on the Dhamma master Kumarasiva. Dhamma master Kumarasiva left the dining hall and returned to his room, where he said to his two attendants, "I have a job for you." "What is it?" they asked. "I need you to pull out the needles." At that point, the needles started coming out of the pores of his skin. It was like a magician's trick. In Chinese history, it is recorded that Dhamma master Kumarasiva had two sons. However, his spiritual penetration and miraculous functioning were inconceivable. They should not look down on him because he had wives and sons. He had a bodhisattva manifesting in the world. So Dhamma master Kumarasiva's own story is quite long. His father's name is Kumarayatna. Kumarayatna was the son of a high official in India. And although he was heir to his father's position, he renounced the world instead and traveled everywhere to search for a good knowing advisor. Since Kumarayana's father was a high official, the father was welcomed warmly wherever he went. In his travel, he went to Kucha, where the king met him at the border and escorted him into the palace to the banquet. The king had a little sister named Jiva. From birth, she was so intelligent that she looked down on all men in his own country. The king invited Kumarayana to a banquet, and the moment Jiva saw him, she fell in love with him and wished to marry him. Although she didn't say anything, her brother, who was also quite intelligent, noticed her reaction. He decided it was meant to be and ordered Kumarayana to marry her. Before long, she became pregnant, and a lot of strange things began to happen. Originally, she did not understand the Indian language, but strangely enough, when she was pregnant with Kumarasiva, she suddenly could both understand and converse in them. Not only that, her eloquence was unobstructed, and her wisdom increased greatly. At that time, an arahant said, "The child in that woman's womb is no ordinary child, but one of great wisdom." This is similar to the situation when Sariputta was in his mother's womb. So the child is probably just like Sariputta, the wisest of the Buddha's Sauhira disciple. When he was still in his mother's womb, then Kumarasiva helped his mother become wise. 2 or 3 years later, she gave birth to a second son. She often visited the great Chaoling temple, where she listened to the virtuous master expounding the Dhamma, because her basic disposition was extremely fine. When she heard the Dhamma master expounded the Dhamma, saying that everything in the world was bound up in suffering, emptiness and impermanence, and was without a self, she resolved to leave home, no matter what. At this time, Kumarasiva was only 7 years old, although his father had formerly wanted to leave home. After his marriage to Jiva, he gave up the idea. He was now too much in love with his beautiful wife and too fond of his money. It's hard to practice giving when one is poor. It is hard to study the way when one is rich. Because of his wealth and rank, Kumarayana had become confused. Not only did he not want to leave home, he wouldn't allow his wife to leave home either. But Jiva was determined to leave home and accordingly make a vow. "You say you won't let me leave home," she said, "but I will die before I will remain here." And she began to fast. At first, Kumarayana didn't think much of her not eating. But when she hadn't taken any food or even drink or water for 6 days, he grew concerned. On the evening of the 6th day, seeing her weak condition and fearing that she might really starve to death, he finally relented. "All right," she said. "You may leave the home life. Now please eat something." Jiva replied, "First ask the Dhamma master to cut my hair and then I will eat. Otherwise, after I eat, you might go back on your words." Kumarayana had no choice but to go to the great Chaoling temple and ask the abbot to shave her wife's head. After that, she ate. From that time on, she studied the Buddha Dhamma with great sincerity. In studying the Dhamma, sincerity is essential. That's why this virtue, this quality, sincerity is very important. Without a sincere heart, no matter how long you study, you will obtain nothing. Because she was so sincere, ready to starve to death in order to leave home, and because she saw cultivation as more important than life itself, she was able to reach the extreme of single-mindedness. So this quality is very important. When you are able to see the importance of cultivation being the most important, more important than your own life, then you will be able to achieve great things. She put absolute lay everything else aside, and at that time, her spiritual life blazed, and she realized the first fruit of arahantship. So this is very true. I remember in the late 80s, the moment I read about the four number two, then the moment my nature understand all this, from that moment onward, it started searching. Then later on, in the year 1986, when the sign came, when the message of Kuan Yin came, this nature went all out to cultivate because of the understanding and the faith. So this understanding is very important. Nothing is more important than cultivation. Often she would take Kumara Siva with her to the temple. He was only 7 years old at that time. And when he saw people bowing to the Buddha, he would do the same. When he saw people lighting incense, he would do the same. Once in the temple, Kumara Siva saw a large incense burner in front of the Buddha image. It must have weighed at least 100 pounds. But he picked it right up and put it on his head with no effort at all. Once he has done this, he thought, I'm just a little child. How can I lift such a heavy object or things? With that one thought, the burner suddenly became very heavy and crushed onto the ground. From that experience, he awoke to the fact that everything is made from the mind alone. Before he had discriminated, he lifted the burner easily. Once he gave rise to discrimination, what had not been heavy became heavy. From this, he knew that the 10,000 dhammas arise only from the mind. Once he had a discriminating thought, he was no longer in touch with his true mind. That's why all cultivation starts from the true mind. Never depart from the self nature. Soon he left the home with his mother. What do you think his father did? He was very upset. He found it as hard to let go of his son as it had been to let go of his wife. He may have weep bitter tears. It's not known for sure. However, Kumara Siva's mother was very firm. Cry all you like, she said. But we are leaving home, and off they went. After Kumara Siva left home, he studied the small Hikka teaching and recited the sutta at the rate of 1,000 verses of 36 words each every day, over 36,000 words a day. That's about 30 times as many words as there are in the Surangama Mantra. Think it over. Kumara Siva at 7 years old could memorize that many words in a single day. How does our intelligence compare with his? Every day you are given 24 Chinese characters to learn. But today you didn't remember yesterday's lesson. How can we possibly compare with him studying at the rate of 36,000 words a day? Kumara Siva soon mastered all the small Hikka sutras spoken by the Buddha. He studied not only Buddhist texts, but also the books of worldly knowledge, such as medicine, divination, astrology, and physiognomy. Physiognomy involves telling people's fortune on the basis of their physical features. One can tell whether a person will be poor or blessed based on his appearances. Having mastered the small Hikka Sutra, Kumara Siva went to India to study the great Hikka Sutra. His mother soon had an awakening. Being a little sister of a king, after she left home, I was showered with offerings. Some make offerings of money, others of delicious food and drink. Not wishing to live in luxury and intend to study the Buddha Dharma, she decided to take Kumarasiva with her and travel about in India, visiting the place of the Buddha's birth. In India, Kumarasiva began studying the Great Vahikal Sutta. When he had studied the Small Vahikal Sutta, he found them to be extremely wonderful. Upon being introduced to the Great Vahikal Dhamma, he realized that it was the wonderful within the wonderful in inconceivable state. From the time he left the home life, Kumarasiva worked extremely hard at his study. In addition to being intelligent, Kumarasiva was also not lazy. But he was intelligent. Because he was intelligent, he learned the sutta very fast. Because he was not lazy, he learned. His learning was extensive. If he had been intelligent but lazy, he never would have learned very much. If he had been industrious but not intelligent, he also would not have learned very much. But since he had both, he learned very fast. When Kumarasiva had mastered the Great Vahikal Sutta, he returned to Kucha to propagate the Dhamma and teach living beings. Being as intelligent and studious as he was, he soon gained great renown as a Dhamma master. In a small country north of Kucha, there was a master of debate who thought that no one could out-debate him. He beat the palace drum loudly and announced that if anyone could beat him in the debate, he would chop off his own head and present it to that person as a gift. This too was similar to the incident which took place between Sariputta's uncle and the Buddha. As Kumarasiva happened to be passing through, he questioned the man about two principles, which rendered him completely speechless. Since he couldn't bear to chop off his head, he bowed to Kumarasiva as his teacher and studied with him. Then Kumarasiva returned to Kucha, where his uncle was the king. The king believed in the Buddha Dhamma and was extremely reverent towards his nephew. He even had a golden lion throne made for him and asked him to ascend it and speak the Dhamma. But at that time, Kumarasiva had something else in his mind. He wanted to convert his small vehicle master, Bandhudatta. His small vehicle master had a lot of disciples, and if Kumarasiva could convert him, he would convert many others to believe in the great vehicle as well. So although his uncle had made him a lion throne, he still intended to leave Kucha. This greatly upset his uncle. "I have been so gracious as to make you this throne," he said, "and you show me no consideration whatsoever." Curiously enough, shortly thereafter, Bandhudatta arrived at the border, seeking entrance into Kucha. When the border officer informed the palace, both Kumarasiva and the king went to meet him. The king asked Bandhudatta, "Why have you come from so far?" Bandhudatta replied, "I came first of all because I heard, great king, of your deep faith in the Buddha Dhamma and your respect for the Triple Gem, and I wish to meet you. Secondly, I heard of Dhamma Master Kumarasiva's success in propagating the Dhamma, and I want to see him." Kumarasiva was delighted to see his teacher, and spoke for him. The sutta of the questions of the virtuous woman, individual woman, inquires about the principles of Great Vehicle Buddhism. When he had finished, his teacher said, "Just what particular advantages does the Great Vehicle have that have caused you to take it up in lieu of the small vehicle?" The Great Vehicle talk about emptiness, but emptiness is just emptiness, nothing at all. What's the use of studying it? If everything is empty, then why study it? Kumarasewa said, "In emptiness, there is wonderful existence. In true emptiness, there is wonderful existence. Within wonderful existence, there is true emptiness. The Great Vehicle is the ultimate teaching. It is not like a small vehicle which restricts itself with names and terms and does not teach genuine liberation. The small vehicle is too rigid and stuffy." Then Bandhu Datta countered, "I have an analogy for the emptiness of the Great Vehicle. Once there was a madman who asked a weaver to weave him a piece of fine silk. The first piece the weaver brought him was not fine enough, and the second one was still too coarse. He kept sending the weaver back to his loom until, in exasperation, the weaver finally confronted him with nothing at all. Just his empty fist clenched in space and said, 'Here it is. This is my finest work.' But there was nothing there," the madman said. "The silk is so fine," said the weaver, "that even I, a master weaver, cannot see it. It's so fine, it's invisible." The madman was delighted and paid a handsome price for the silk. The other weaver also took up this method, and they all cheated the madman, who paid out a lot of money for nothing at all. "Your exposition of the Great Vehicle Dhamma is exactly like that," said Bandhu Datta. "You talk about emptiness and say that within emptiness there is existence, but no one can see it." Then Kumarasewa said, "No, no, no." And he continued to explain many subtle Great Vehicle doctrine to him, until finally, after over a month of discussion, he won his teacher over to the Great Vehicle and brought him to a true understanding of the doctrine of true emptiness and wonderful existence. "Then what do you think happened?" Bandhu Datta said, "I want to bow to you as my teacher." Kumarasewa said, "You can't do that. I have already bowed to you as my master. How can you bow to me as your master?" Bandhu Datta said, "I am your small vehicle master. You can be my great vehicle master. That way we will both have our masters and we will both have our vehicles and everyone will be satisfied. It's a big problem." In this way, Kumarasewa received his own teacher as a disciple. It's obvious from this that the ancient did not have a mark of self. They had true understanding. Otherwise, Bandhu Datta would not have been able to bow to his own disciple as a teacher. He would simply have said, "I don't care how lofty your eloquence. You are my disciple, and that's it." The ancient had no view of self. They took their way as their teacher. At that, all that was necessary was that someone else to have more virtue than they, and they would bow to them as their teacher. They had no objective thought of rank or position, and they were not self-centered. One time when the weather was extremely dry in Kucha and it hadn't rained for a long time, Kumarasewa manifested great spiritual power and set up a Dhamma altar to seek rain. He announced within 3 days there will certainly be rain. Sure enough, before the 3 days had passed, it rained. Everyone believed in him even more. When the king of other nations invited Kumarasiva to go and expound upon the sutra, they would even allow themselves to be used as chair. Kumarasiva would deliver lectures sitting on the backs of the king, who did this, and the king would listen to the Dhamma that way to show how much they honor him and how much they esteem the Buddha Dhamma. In India and Kuchha, Dhamma Master Kumarasiva traveled everywhere expounding upon the sutras and propagating the Dhamma. When he was still a child traveling with his mother, they once met an enlightened Arahant who told his mother, "You should take good care of this little novice. He is no ordinary monk. If by the time he is 36, he has not broken the precept, he will be able to teach and transform countless beings, as did the fourth patriarch, Upagupta, in India. The fourth patriarch lived in a stone cave. Every time he converted someone, he would put a slip of bamboo on his cave. Eventually, the cave was entirely filled with bamboo slips, which proves that he has saved an incredible number of people." Kumarasiva's mother related the Arahant's word to her son, and he believed them sincerely. Later, his mother certified to the third fruits of Arahantship. She took a look at his causes and condition, and saw that her son's affinity lay in China. She told him, "The beings you should save are in China." Kumarasiva replied, "If I can help spread the Buddha Dharma to China, then no matter how disadvantageous it is for me, even if it costs me my life, I will do it. The way of the Bodhisattva is to benefit living beings and forget oneself. If I can contribute something to Buddhism, then I am willing to give up my life to do it, no matter how difficult the task is. I am determined to carry it out." It was at that point that Yao Xing finally took Kumarasiva to China. When Kumarasiva was still in Xinyang, Lu Guang's most esteemed minister, Zhang Zi, fell ill, a Brahma healer thought to swindle Lu Guang and claim that he could cure Zhang Zi's illness. Lu Guang gave him a large sum of money, but Kumarasiva knew the man was a swindler and said to Lu Guang, "No matter how much money you give to him, you won't be able to cure Zhang Zi's illness. I will prove it to you. Here is the five color thread, which I shall burn into ashes. Then I will put the ashes in some water. If the ashes turn back into a five-color thread, then Zhang's illness will not be killed. If they do not, he will get well. If you don't believe me, we will try it out." He burned the thread and put the ashes in the cup of water. As soon as he did this, the ashes turned into the five-colored thread. Lu Guang still tried to cure Zhang Zi's illness, but was unsuccessful. Soon after Zhang Zi died, Lu Guang had spent a lot of money and got no result whatsoever. This was the inconceivable state of Dhamma Master Kumarasiva. His spiritual power was something which ordinary people could never fathom. There are many stories of his miraculous feat, but we can only give a general account right now. As you continue to study the Buddha Dhamma, you will come to know the rest. Dipitaka Master Kumarasiva produced over 300 rolls of translations in his lifetime. When he was about to die, he said, "I translated many suttas during my lifetime, and I personally do not know if they were correct. If they are, then when my body is cremated after I die, my tongue will not burn. If there are mistakes, however, it will. When his body was cremated after he entered the stillness, his tongue was found and burned in the ash. This proved the sutta translated by Dhamma Master Kumarasiva are entirely correct and without error." So that was the greatness of Kumarasiva. During the Tang Dynasty, Vinaya Master Tao Xuan of Changnan Mountain specialized in cultivating the precepts. Changnan Mountain is a famous mountain where there are many cultivators. Elder Master Xuan once dwelt in a hut on that mountain. Vinaya Master Tao Xuan was so strict in his observance of the precept that a god was moved to make offering of food to him. He ate the food of the gods. I've told you the story of how the Master Kui Zi went to his place and to wait for offerings, but never received any. One day, Vinaya Master Tao Xuan stumbled as he was walking, for he was getting quite old, and the son of the heavenly king of the north in the heavens of the four kings came to support him. He asked the god, "Why does everyone prefer to read Kumarasiva's translation?" The god replied, "Kumarasiva make vow in life after life to translate sutta for every Buddha that came into the world. He has been the translation master for the past seven Buddhas, and so his translations are extremely accurate. Now we have the opportunity to lecture on and listen to the Dhamma Flower Sutta, and it is all due to the merits and virtues of Dhamma Master Kumarasiva. If he had not translated the sutta, we would not have been able to hear the Dhamma found within it. Therefore, as we listen to the sutra, we should be grateful to Dhamma Master Kumarasiva. How can we show our gratitude? We should make vows to propagate the Buddha Dhamma and to translate more sutra into English. Then we are acting in accordance with the wishes of Dhamma Master Kumarasiva." So this one is something very beautiful and useful to express our gratitude. So you have to vow to propagate the Buddha Dhamma and to translate them. Okay, translated by Dipitaka Master Kumarasiva of Yaoqing. Yaoqing is the name of the ruined period of Emperor Yaoxing. Kumarasiva was the Dipitaka Master, one who had mastered the three divisions of the Buddhist canon, the Sutra, the Satya, and the Vinaya, Sutra is a Sanskrit word interpreted as meaning a telling text. Above, a sutra tallies with the wonderful principle of all the Buddhas, and below it tallies with the opportunity for teaching beings. The sutra comprises the study of samadhi, or here they use the word concentration. It should be collectedness of mind. The Vinaya consists of the study of the monk's precepts. There are 5 precepts, 8 precepts, and 10 precepts. The 10 major and 48 minor bodhisattva precepts. The 250 bhikkhu precepts and the 348 bhikkhuni precepts. Observance of precepts produces samadhi. Shastras encompasses study of wisdom. Thus, the Sutra Vinaya and Shastra are just the study of precepts, samadhi, and wisdom. The Shastra were composed by later generation of disciples upon investigating the principles of Buddhism. They are the Shastra on the awakening of faith in the Mahayana, Shastra on the door of understanding the 100 Dhammas, and Shastra of consciousness only, the Shastra of perfection of great wisdom, and many other. The Shastra cover all kinds of wisdom. Okay, we stop here. Before we continue, I was told by Sui just how the hard copy didn't mesh with the soft copy, like certain places. You have to skip, jump, then come back. Never mind. If you are following the soft copy, you try to find out. But based on the updated hard copy, I think this hard copy should be the latest. Okay. We are now open up for meditation reporting.
Hello, Amitabha, Radio, Mrs. Steele, and all Kayamitas. Happy New Year
2024. Yes.
Radio. Today I want to share two stories. I mean, not stories, but experience. One is the meditation, one is the experience in daily life.
Good.
Matthew, the first one that I want to share one is the meditation.
Okay.
How do I start? Okay, Matthew, this meditation I encounter in sometime in December.
Okay.
But to explain to you, I have to use words. Actually, there's no, it's in the silent mind. So now I have to describe it to you and Kayamitas. I will use the words. And hopefully the words can describe the meditation itself. So I do the lying down meditation. As soon as I mean, sometimes my meditation is really fast. Sometimes it takes time. So
yeah,
but this
no
one
problem.
Is really fast.
Yeah.
So this is really fast. And the silent mind appeared. And I was in the spacious awareness without a center. So it was inside there. Inside there. There's nothing to be to be aware in a sense Just in the spacious awareness without a center. Then after that, the awareness. How do I say? The awareness realized or the awareness aware that there's something happening. And it come out from the spacious awareness. Come out from the spacious awareness. This is how I say in my words, come out from my spacious awareness. And then you look at the body. The body lying down. And then this body lying down, this is my words, although there is no words, is without response, without resistance. It's just like a dead body. Okay? Then, after, this is all happening by itself, Bratio.
Yeah, I know.
So after that, it just aware of what is going on there. Then after that, the awareness go back into the spacious awareness again. Then it continue in the spacious awareness until it come out of the meditation itself. So this is first. Maybe Bharati, you want to say something first.
You continue.
Then the next one is a different one.
Yeah, you continue.
Okay. So the second one, that is a different one, that is a recently one, in my daily life, I have a special guest that came to the house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the special guest is something that I didn't expect, and I didn't notice it even because Baratio, I cannot see without the glasses, you know.
Yeah.
So when I have somebody told me, the family told me, then I look at it with my spectacle, then I say, oh my god, what is this, you know? There is a group of ants came into the house from the balcony, into the house, you know. And the ants are is no ordinary ant, you know, not the small little ant that comes when you left it. So I look at it, wow, so much, so many, you know, but it's not like 10 or 20, you know. It's like out of nowhere this ant come, you know. In the balcony, we also never see this before, and then it appeared. So it was like lining like a troop, marching from the balcony onto the cupboard, you know, the white cupboard.
Okay.
So then I said, my mind is thinking like, oh, I cannot hurt the, I do not want to hurt that. So I got the organic spray that repel the insect, So I spray on the tissue and then I place it at the location where the ants are, see whether the ant will run away or not. And then I put somewhere at the source where it come in, you know. You know, so see whether it will not come in, you know.
Okay.
I just leave it alone, And the next day, you look at it again, and it's still there, you know, brother.
Okay.
Then I say, since this one doesn't work, I got another floor cleaning, is also a kind of repellent that the ant do not like. That it will not kill the ant or anything like that. So I also place it on the tissue and then put a different location to kind of expel the, the ants will go away. I mean, it works for the reason I use it is because it works for the normal ants that come and eat the food if you left food on the table, you know? Okay. So I tried that. And also the next day it didn't work, you know? So I said, oh, what happening? Then I had this inquiry. Something is not ordinary, you know? My mind just said, oh, this is not ordinary. So what happened is on that particular day, I do puja and I had the dana offering, you know, on that day. So I just make the dana offering to the ants, you know. Then at first I said to the insect. Then I said, no. I think it has to be the ants. All the ants. I said to this is what how I say it, I said in front of the triple gem, I said I do not want to hurt the ants, and I like the ants to leave the house by offering this dana, the merits from this dana, dedicate and share this merits with the ants, so that they will leave this house, and may they be reborn. Have a good rebirth. May they be well and happy. And may they meet with the Buddha Dharma and have the opportunity to cultivate as soon as possible. Okay? So that's what I did. Okay, after that, I didn't bother with the end anymore already. Okay? And then the next, I don't know whether it was tomorrow or the few hours later, I checked on the table, the ants, radio, all the ants disappear, you know.
Yeah, gone.
Gone.
Very good.
So, there's no traces of the ant anymore. So, isn't it amazing?
Yes. Sadhu, very good.
Sadhu. So, for me, I try using the normal method to carry of them, but when I look at the end, it's different. So I was like, this is a very special guest, you know.
Yeah, you can sense it, that they are different.
They're different, you know.
Something that they wanted.
Exactly.
The offering and decide to share marriage, transfer marriage. I think that was what they want. Because sometimes the non-human or whatever, they will condition things to happen, then sometimes these ends are Dhamma ends. But your this case, I don't think so. It could be something else conditioned it to happen. But the Dhamma end that I experienced that time was 1989 when I was at my teacher's monastery, Sunyataram in Kanchanaburi. The Theravada monk Acharyantra. That time I visited him with another Kayamita, Uncle Cook. We went and visit the way place. Then when we were there, he was actually giving his Dhamma sharing, Dhamma talk, and he was busy. Then we informed the temple administrator, and they passed a message to him. Then the message came back, asked us to wait for him until about midnight or so. When everything is over, then he will meet us. Then we went and visit the place, and we went to the place where he gave talk. Then he has this mindfulness and sensitivity. He senses, then he waved to us. Then I received the message, I rejoice, and from there he patiently listened and waited until all the visitors finished the routine. Then I think about half an hour past midnight, he approached us and he said, "Come, come, come." He straight away asked us to visit his kuti up in the mountains. So we went out with him, the kapya and his kapya, and also one or two of his people. It seemed he already gave instruction to his chief disciple who stayed just below him, halfway up the mountain. His one is the mountain top. There is a kuti, a fish on top of a tree where we can climb up. There are steps. I think they nail it to the tree trunk. But we had to climb up and go in and stay. So that kuti, it seems, was reserved for us. He told us, tonight you all stay down there. Yeah. For the duration you are here, about 5 days we were there. And you know what happened? That very first day, when we were up there sleeping, actually we take leave at about 1 something, almost 2 a.m. in the morning. Then we went back to that kuti, we climbed up. Then everything was fine. Everything was fine. We set out our clothes. You know what is a clothes? The netting. Where the monks go to the forest, they put it up to ward off insects and mosquitoes. Then we lie down and do our meditation, and we also sleep there. So that kuti was big enough, quite spacious. I think for 2 person is more than enough. Then when I was there, I have a look at that place where I can feel the energy there very strong. Then I look into the drawer. I saw this contemplation on death, the dead body and all those things where they do. They look at this photo and all those things. I think must be kept by the chief disciple. Then we decide to pay our respect, do our own self-chanting and all those things. Before we sleep, we normally do that. Then I lie down to sleep mindfully. Yeah, I was fully aware at that time. Then middle of the night, you know what happened? The ants came. These are Dhamma ants. They came, like you say, it's like the full army came. The whole of the cloth, the netting, which my friend who went with me, Uncle Koo, I saw his netting completely, almost 80 to 90%, fully loaded with the ants. Then for me, strangely, the ants were there, but not much. I think about 10% or. But there is one small group. Because when I lie down to sleep, one of my head actually touched the netting of the other side. Then because I was sensitive and mindful, these ants were circulating at my head there, the top forehead there, where I touched the netting. Yeah. And that time was 3:30 a.m. Yeah, I was fully aware. Then I checked the watch, 3:30 a.m. Then I came to know they want me to wake up. Then not long, the chanting start. The monks chanting start, I think, at 3:45 or what, I don't know. But when I felt that thing, I knew something is happening, like a message and all those things. Then I knew Uncle Ku would panic if he were to wake up. Yeah, he was snoring. He was really tired. Then I slowly radiated metta. Then I silenced my mind for a while. Then I knew the ends on my side, they already slowly start to disperse. But Uncle Ku there, he was still there. So I call him slowly. I said, Uncle Ku, Uncle Ku, slowly. Then after many tries, I think he woke up. Then he like very surprised. Is it? What is it? I said, don't panic. Is it? Slowly open your eye. You know what happened? When he saw the ants on the netting, he screamed. He screamed. I said, don't panic. I said, silent. Radiate metta. Sit and meditate. And within 5 minutes, the ants all dispersed. Then we are back to normal. Then I told him, time to get ready and join the chanting. Huh? He said, so early. Yeah, we just rested around 2 a.m. Now 3:30, 3:45, we want to go down again. I said, yes, we have to go down. Then when we went down for the chanting with the monks, it was beautiful. That's why that time I heard that special chanting about the five aggregate. Rupang anicang, rupang anatta. Then they repeat for the other aggregates. Rupang vedana sanya sankara vinyana. Then sabbe sankara anicang, sabbe sankara dukkang, sabbe dhamma anatta. Then together with their pali chanting. But the vibration was very strong, very good. Then after that, the whole of the chanting and sitting meditation lasted until about 6 a.m. Then we break for breakfast. Then on the way to the breakfast, we actually met the chief disciple. But I didn't know who the chief disciple was until we were introduced to them. Then the chief disciple talked to me and Uncle Ku. And he asked me, did the ants visit you? Oh, I straight away rejoiced and replied. I said, yes, Dhamma ant. I said, Satu. I said, yeah, they came. I said, then he said, what happened? I said, it's okay. They want us to wake up. And when I told him all those things, he was full of joy. He said, no wonder Jayantra allow you to use my kuti. So there was a lot of joy. Then he said, we the same, you, me, same. His English was not so good, but I received the message, means we have the Dhamma. So this thing can happen, Dhamma ends. If you are in a cultivation place or cultivator's place, it can happen. Then I think maybe for your case, it could be the non-humans or whatever. They wanted to merge someone. Then they use the end as a communication or means the condition it to arise. That's why you can try whatever. It doesn't work, means it doesn't work. But when you fulfill what they want, it will work. Then they will disperse and it will clear. So all these are part of what they call the spiritual cultivation you will encounter when you have the ability and the understanding. So these are things that do happen. Then you will have a lot of faith, a lot of joy after that. Then regarding your first meditation experience that you described, about the spacious awareness that you went in and other things, I need to ask you some question first. When you say you started the meditation, it was like sometimes very fast, sometimes not so fast, but this time it went in very fast. Then you were in this spacious awareness state. Then you mentioned, yes, you can elaborate. Yeah, what is it?
Okay. Actually, I just want to say that that sometimes I don't want the kayamita to like, wow, as if I can meditate so quickly. No. Sometimes it's like, you know, I'm like very engaged in the daily activities, like engaging in the external.
Yeah.
So it takes some time to like.
That one is understandable.
To settle down. So I'm just trying to tell them that. It's not like as if
every time you can do it.
No, it's not like that one. It's like, it depends on how you engage in your external
daily
activity.
You don't worry, project. Later on, it's throughout the day with you. And you're in that state one.
Okay.
That's why
what I'm saying is, I for this particular meditation, is very smooth, very fast, meaning when I sit down, I do my relaxation, you know. After that, I lie down, and then immediately it go into the spacious awareness. It's silent, the mind silent very fast.
When you're in the spacious awareness, what actually happened?
Spacious awareness, Brother Teo. Just spacious aware, there is spacious awareness without a center. That's it, you know. That's it. So it's just...
You cannot describe using some words.
There is no word to describe it, Brother Teo.
I know. That's why I say you try to use word.
So, but there is no word. I also cannot know what to say. It's just
I give you a hint. Maybe you'll find whether this is suitable. It's like your awareness is in the oneness nature, one with everything.
Yes, it's just everything. It's just spacious awareness. There
when
is no
it's
boundary.
One with everything, it's without a center. Because once there is a center, it is a specific phenomenal awareness. Because you center on the specific phenomenon. So specific phenomenal awareness is with a center. But it's not a fixed center.
This one has no... boundary, it's just boundless and just spacious without center. That's why I can say it's just boundless.
I want to help you by sharing with you this.
Okay.
The oneness nature means your awareness is one with everything. Then the other thing that can happen is if you want to be aware of anything within that nature, even distant phenomena or what, you can. That is what the oneness nature is, the spacious awareness is. So that's why I say you can describe it, it will help. But anyway, I will share this with you first. Then the other thing is that you mentioned how you saw your body and all those things. That one is, I hope, is your nature sense it. Because if you are like a consciousness come out and the consciousness look down, then it's different. That's why the second question is, when you say you see your body, how you see?
Let me explain.
Uh-huh.
So I was telling you, so I go into this spacious awareness. It's just spacious awareness without center. It's just bound. It's without a boundary. Okay, this I can describe without a boundary. There's no description. That's why it's just without a boundary. Okay.
Okay.
Then so what happened is I lie down and then I went into this silent mind and then this spacious awareness and then it's just spacious awareness without it's boundless. That's why I know it's boundless without a center. And then it has been there for, I mean, I know it's just that lah, that spacious awareness. And then after that, I can follow the awareness. That's why I also don't know how to describe this, brother. It just seamlessly, it can see, the next thing I know, it can see this body, you know, lying down.
Okay.
I don't have, you see, without resistance, without anything, one, no, brother. So it just, see the body lying down. Okay, then after that, it's just no response. There's nothing like a dead person like that lying down, and there's no response. I am just saying in words that there is nothing like, you know. I just look at it like I'm telling you like look at it. I mean aware of it like, you know. And then after that this happened by itself. I didn't do anything, and then.
That part is important.
And then I go back to the spacious awareness. It's like very seamless, very smooth, and like a flow without resistance. One, no radio.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, everything we got like a flow without resistance.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that it is not the consciousness come out. So based on what you describe, very likely is. Because when you are in that state, the oneness nature, the spacious awareness without a center, but this nature is very strange. When it's one with everything, even whatever distant phenomena, very, very far or what you want to know, you can perceive. That's why that nature can arise to develop the awareness of it. Then, like I said, how you see your body, I hope, is your nature that has this ability to actually manifest to see. Then when it see, like you say, seamless, means no gap, nothing, then everything like happen by itself. So that one is okay. It means that nature, when you are in that, you cannot describe because that is your oneness nature. So more important is when you go through all this, you just silent everything and maintain the awareness nature within, then let it move. Means let the nature move. Means trust that nature. And when it move, when it do all those movements, you will understand. Then when you come out, you can actually develop understanding and use word to try to let people understand. Like I just now explained to you, the words that I use is that nature has become like one with everything, the oneness nature. You use the word without boundary, which is also quite similar. But the oneness nature is very different. When your nature is one with everything, it's like you pervade the whole of the existence, then no matter how far, how distant that thing, the phenomena within it, if your nature want to know, it can know. Yeah. But it's just that understanding, the awareness of it. Yeah. Then after that, you can actually silence everything and stay there, and let it be. But whatever that manifests, understand it. Because these are the transformations that are possible when you are with that true nature, that oneness nature, which very few people can go into. So when you go into, you have to develop the clarity of understanding by observation, it's completely silent, and just find out what that thing is. Yeah. Then you have the understanding already. Later on, when you come out of it, you reflect, you contemplate, and you will understand that this nature is very beautiful. That's why the Mahayana teaching, when it mentioned about the speck of dust, even one speck of dust, you have the ability to be in the oneness nature. That is the singularity, the source. The whole universe is there. Everything is there. You will understand. Yeah. Because you have realized that oneness nature. But it has to be very stable. It has to have that understanding. Because our nature is one with all things. Yeah, that is the true nature, the original nature, 本来的面目. So this is what the source is all about. From the source, all things arise. Then when you are able to be in this state, it is still the awareness, nature, in spacious awareness, oneness in everything. Yeah. But the final realization, the more important one, is the cessation. The complete cessation of form and mind, including the pure awareness, everything. That cessation, when it happens, is very different again. So you can go through all this, and all these are possible. As I started to teach you, when you can have this understanding. But now, maybe it's still new to you, that's why you find it difficult to use words to describe it. But later on, when you become more more akin to what is happening, and later on, as your wisdom and your understanding develop, then the understanding will allow you to develop your own understanding of what this thing is. Then you can find new words and new things to describe all this. Like a lot of things that my nature came to know, the spacious awareness, nobody taught me. I haven't really read about it in any book, without a center, of course. Yeah. That the specific phenomenal awareness also, that I saw, I knew, that I had to come up with the words to describe what this is. Then what sati is, awareness before the knowing, before the perceiving, before the aggregates of mind coming. So all these are the words that my nature came to develop through understanding after it has gone through the meditative training, the process, and the ability to see and observe all this. Initially, when I went through, my nature knew what happened, but I cannot find words to describe them or to share them. But I realized after many years, when my nature stabilized, then when I start to teach and when I start to share, then the words come. The words that are meant to be come. Then I can use them to actually describe all this. That's how it will happen. So for you, it will take a while. So initially, like, you will have the understanding that you cannot use words to describe it. These are things which are beyond words. You cannot really describe. And you also don't have the stability or understanding at the moment, because you just went in not long and you have not stayed in those states or experienced those states for long enough duration and practices or cultivation. So all this will limit your ability to express, to share. But it's good enough. What you describe is good enough. And sadhu to you. But more important is not so much of the experience. The experience is part and parcel of the cultivation, because cultivator will go through. But more important is the understanding that come out of it. The understanding that come out of it is more important, that we know there is such a nature. And this nature is capable of what? It's not just to describe something esoteric for people to become curious. No. It's the awareness nature has this ability to allow us to be in that state of oneness. And that one you cannot describe, because it's not a being, it's not a mind, it's not something that has words. It's that nature. That nature has no word, but it is capable of that type of phenomenal experience. And that phenomenal experience is not like the normal thing that happened via the mundane mind or the thinking mind, or we are a consciousness and it's content. No, it's just that pure awareness, that pure nature that has this ability to be aware. And when it has the condition that it wants to manifest and develop awareness, it can, even very, very distant, very, very far, like no way of you able to like listen or hear, because it's too far. It's like the other end of the universe or whatever within space, the massive of this limitless space. Then wherever that nature has the ability to reach, if you want to know, it can know. That's why that time I experimented with it, I was so amazed that all these are possible. But it's not for us to like develop psychic or whatever. No, it's nothing to do with that. It's that nature has this ability. That's why through all this cultivation, you will know the true mind, the true nature has a lot more things inside there which living beings haven't have a chance to understand or explore. That's like the cultivation of consciousness, the pure awareness, then the oneness nature, and then the realization of that cessation, which the Buddha called it Nibbana. All this is what the spiritual field is all about, which is way beyond the normal comprehension of living being or sentient being. The living being and sentient being is only active. They can only understand when thought is involved. They use the mundane mind a lot. Beyond the mundane mind, they cannot understand. They are hardly able to penetrate or comprehend. Even awareness, sati, the silent mind, they can't even touch it or realize it. Then for us cultivator, we not only have a glimpse, touch it, we can stabilize it, then we can go into it, then we can locate the gateway and move through the gateway. When you move through the gateway, a lot more things happen. The transformation is internal and the consciousness become more and more refined. As you develop more wisdom and understanding, it will transform your consciousness. And this consciousness of pure awareness become more and more refined until it is so fine the mundane mind cannot exist. That's why it collapses. The vibration is too fine. It cannot support that, it collapses. Then when it collapses, that nature again different. That nature is the true nature. It shines forth. That's why certain aspect of teachings, I think, I don't know whether it's Buddhist or Hindu or what, they call it Tantra. Tantra. So I was told by one of my guys, he said the Tantra teaching did mention a little bit of this higher mind, but I don't think it's relevant because they break up the the consciousness into seven, I don't know how they break it down. There are like seven more type of consciousness related type of mind. But all these are the higher mind. The higher mind, which is not the supramundane mind. This one is like, I don't know how they describe it. They have the lower mind, the higher mind. Then after that, the personal. I think some of these are Hindu teaching, but to me it's not important, because this type of knowledge is mainly dealing with the consciousness and the mundane mind. That's why they evolve. They develop what they call transformation of consciousness, but they didn't develop the ability to cease and to go into the awareness nature, the self nature. They move along the path of consciousness to higher consciousness and higher consciousness until they reach the formless rhyme and all those things. So this is not the direction that we cultivator develop. We all cultivator, we go into the awareness field, which is nothing to do with the consciousness and its content. So hopefully with this sharing, it will help you, Po Cheng, and some who has actually progressed to have the ability to understand what I share. It will help you all to develop better understanding. That's why you must describe to me what you all experience. Then I, my nature will know how to share with you all what is appropriate, so that later on, all this will be useful and meaningful to you all. Okay, Po Cheng?
Yes, the father, regarding this this oneness nature, right? I mean, you describe so much, so I may have this question. Actually, for me, I don't have the the curiosity to want to know what is outside of this universe or whatever, you know. I don't have that craving to know.
No need to know.
That craving to know, no?
Yeah, need to know. Yeah, that one is a craving. That is a desire from the mundane mind, the analytical mind, or what we call the mind that wants to know. So that one is from the mundane mind. Yeah, so
I don't have that. I don't have that craving, you know, Brother Teo. So
I understand. That's what I say. No need. We're not important.
No need. Okay.
But what is important is when you went into this awareness state, then it transformed into the oneness nature, which is specific phenomenal awareness first. Then when the center diminished, then you completely silent and still, then the oneness nature actually can arise. Then when the oneness nature arises, that nature is different again. That's why you have to allow it to move, to manifest. Then within that nature, you will understand. That's why the understanding comes after you come out of it. When you are inside there, you cannot analyze or do anything. You only experience through the whole thing. That nature will go through. Then that nature will have that ability. That's why that nature is not a being. It's something that is way beyond. We call it a nature. It's like your true nature, your self nature, all the different names. Then there is this original nature. From there, it surfaces. Then when you have the condition to actually move into it, after your transformation of awareness, I call it, not consciousness alone, the transformation of awareness that will make your consciousness very fine, very, very fine. Then that one, its movement is different again. Unless you locate the gateway and go in, you cannot experience all this. All this that I'm describing to you is from the gateway beyond. After you able to locate the gateway, then you are able to go in and allow the nature to actually make its movement, means the trust, then it will transform. It will open up a lot of the physical nadis. They call it the chakras, the nadis and other things. Then when this one transforms, the vibration become more and more fine, then it will support that type of consciousness. Otherwise, it cannot support that type of fine consciousness, very fine. Then from there, the awareness nature has the ability to move and to develop further understanding for the form and mind that has the ability to go through the gateway to experience all this. It's like you explore a totally new field. We call it the awareness field. The awareness is different from consciousness. Consciousness is still at the what they call at the boundary of the awareness. So once the awareness come out, this is the first thing that come out from the nature or the source, then that pure awareness, or what we call the awareness nature, from there it create consciousness. So consciousness, once it come out, then through the whatever views, opinion and conditioning from memory, then the content of consciousness went in, then the mundane mind, all this creation, the phenomenal world all come about. But what you need to understand is to see that they are very near. Then when the pure awareness, which is the first thing to come out, then after that, we have the pure consciousness, the pure seeing. Like the Buddha said, in the seeing, there is only the seeing consciousness, the hearing. So without its content, so pure consciousness without its content is something that cultivator must have the ability to be in. It's just like in the seeing, it's just the seeing consciousness. It's just the consciousness, like the physics experiment, the light bulb light up, then you become like conscious. No one to be conscious yet. The egoic mind hasn't come in yet. At that moment, you must have the ability to be with that. Then the egoic mind, the views, opinion, condition, and the stirring cannot go in. The content of consciousness cannot go in. That's why at the moment of pure perception, pure seeing, or the direct seeing. So all this, the cultivator who has the mindfulness, the stability or awareness, can go through those transformation process to develop this ability. So these are more important aspect of cultivation. Okay? Bojay?
Yes, Sadhu Bratio. For me to ask you that question, when Bratio explained, it gave me a lot of clarity, you know, what is going on.
Because otherwise you cannot, because the words haven't come to you yet. You don't have the stability to describe the whole thing yet.
Because
you are seeing bits and pieces of all these things manifesting off and on, you cannot link the whole thing. It's just like people study Dhamma, all not connected. You cannot link them.
So actually, by asking you the question, it kind of helped me to link the pieces together, like you said, you know?
Yeah, that's why I need you all to share all this. Then you to arise the causes and conditions for my nature to speak. Then share and to give rise to all this understanding.
But I must say this, you know? Yeah. Trust is so amazing, you know.
Because
I did not do anything. The trust is very amazing, you know.
Yeah. Yes. Because that trust is the one that allows the nature to move. Otherwise, it's stagnant one. Because when you start to think or curious or doubt, then people get stagnant, blocked. Oh, what is this? How come like that? Then they are trapped.
Yes, the trust is amazing in the sense because everything is without resistance. It just move, you know. But it just manifest. And then
that nature just manifest and move.
Yes.
And
yes,
it will give rise to whatever transformation that is needed. And you must have the ability to actually connect and go through the gateway. The trust only come in after you have detected the gateway. Otherwise, you cannot do. But the trust is from that nature. Then only you do.
I just feel that, Brother Teo, that the trust kind of leads everything then and move by itself, you know, without any resistance, you know, Brother
Teo. The inner transformation through the gateway is entirely by the true mind, the true nature, trust. You cannot interfere with the thought. You cannot interfere with external views, opinion, and condition. The moment that one come out, gone. You are not there already.
But Brother, all this does not exist, you know, during that time, you know, when this manifestation by the trust, right? There is no interference of this mundane mind, nothing, you know. It's just
definitely, that's what I say. You cannot do trust until you reach that nature within, until you have gone through the gateway. Otherwise, you cannot do. Otherwise, the thing will come and interfere. Because trust is what that nature is all about. You have to trust that nature to move on its own. And that nature is already intelligent by itself. Means that nature itself is already intelligent. That's why that nature will know what that form and mind need, what is required to be transformed. They know, and they will move. Then they will create this type of movement. I still remember how the thing melt inside. Then how it activate all those things that need to be activated. My nature didn't do anything. It's just witnessing. Then it just happened, keep on happening. That's why all the discussion I described to you is the outcome of it. What happened, even the gas come out and all things. I saw that pure energy. Once it melt through the gateway, it become pure energy. Then how it move and activate all those things. Then from there, how it transformed my awareness, my consciousness, and all those things. That all this manifestation, it keep on happening, unending. Then the heart area, front and back, it starts to have its movement. Now, a lot of things. That's why unless you go through that type of cultivation, you cannot understand all this. Even to locate the gateway is not easy. And for your case, because of your faith and your past, you have the ability, which is something you should have gratitude and rejoice. Sadhu to you.
Yes, sadhu, yeah. sadhu. Brother Teo, I did have a lot of gratitude, you know, and thanks to your teaching, you know. Yeah, it's amazing. Brother Teo, talking about the gas, right? I want to say that the gas, huh? You can feel in your body the bubbles.
Yeah,
bubbles,
you will release.
You know?
Keep on releasing.
Then the beauty is
no smell on. When you are doing it with the pure energy, no smell on. But you fuck the off. The gas
releasing. It's very true. And then you can feel the bubbles in your body, moving here and there, you know?
Yeah.
All the time, you know?
Yeah, you can trace. How is that released?
It can move and come out, you know.
You will start to understand a lot of things which is not written anywhere, not described.
Lucky relative tell me, I was thinking what happening to my body, you know, something strange.
So it's a cleansing.
Know?
It's a cleansing. That one cleansing. Some people call it detox. They do Ayurveda or thing that one use. Herbs or chemical. This one no need. This one is the pure energy that actually come out when you see whatever yin and yang energy external that the normal form and mind has developed. Even you do Tai Chi or whatever, or concentration or jhana, this energy that you have done, they are not wasted because they can be made use of. You can either use it to radiate metta, loving kindness, or radiate whatever, compassion and all those things. It can. But a more useful way will be let it melt through the gateway. Then when it melts through the gateway, it's very soothing. As it goes through the gateway, it like transforms into pure energy. It becomes pure energy. And the pure energy is so pure and so beautiful. Then that one will know what to do. It knows which one needs the, I use the word activation. They need to activate which part. It will work by itself. You cannot control one. You cannot like want it to go where. Cannot. It just happened by itself. Then as it happened, the byproduct, the whatever thing that happened, even the gas release, you can see how it actually come out. Then the life force later on, when it come, you can decide to channel 90% or 100% into that nature. So that time I use it to develop the internal movement and the meditation. That time I hardly use the life force to create thinking and thought, because when I meditate, I really went there. Then that nature just allow that movement. Then it is so amazing. Like even during the normal conscious moment, the whole of the life force consciousness, when it comes, I can just shut it off and channel it through the gateway. Then it doesn't arise at the sense door, like the sixth sense door or the five physical senses and the brain. If your life force comes, you become conscious, you normally use it at the sixth sense door. To become conscious, then you put a container. That's why when you think a lot, when you study, you use a lot of mental energy. Because this is what energy is used for. That's why thought process consume a lot of energy, dissipate a lot of life force energy. But when you allow it to go into the nature, it develops the meditative transformation internally. That's why that time my nature progressed very fast. It cut short my training and lead to the possibility of the mundane mind collapsing within, I remember, about 8 or 9 months. Then it just happened. Then my nature shine forth and everything become different. So the mundane mind gone, the super mundane mind, that nature shine forth. Then that nature we shine forth is fully aware. Amazing. That's why when this thing happened, a lot of things will happen, and only the form and mind that goes through it will understand. That's why the Buddha said, this is Pachetang Veditabo Vinohiti, can only be realized by the wise, each for themselves. So this transformation and the cultivation process, only the wise can go through and develop the understanding. Very good, Sadhu.
Sadhu, very good. I really have great gratitude towards the teacher, the Buddha, and Brother Theo's guidance. Yeah. Thank you so much, Kan'en.
Yeah, also, thank your good karmic nature, the karmic conditioning. So, your faith, your dedication, and your past, all this has helped you. Then, when you start doing the bodhisattva vow and all those things, this thing will manifest even faster and stronger. Then it will take you along. Then in future, you will transform very fast. Then in future, when you come, you become different again.
Brad, you talking about these bodhisattva vows, right? I feel that because of the bodhisattva vows, a lot of things happened in the recent weeks. I come across things that I usually will not come across, like, you know. For example, the special guest came, and I have so much faith and joy, able to help, and the the so-called faith in the Buddha Dhamma is even stronger, you know, because of that, you know.
Yes.
I mean, I don't see as a stupid, I mean, people see like a superstition, bad omen, or something like that. But I don't see all this as such, you know. I see it as like,
yeah,
out of the way and something for me to learn as well, you know, to help, you know, whatever.
Yeah, these are manifestation for your nature to learn.
Yes, correct.
To develop understanding, to expose you further and further, that there are a lot of things that you will come to understand and learn. That's why as a true cultivator, bodhisattva, you will understand all this. That's why my nature can understand so many things. Whoever come, I can guide, I can teach.
Yes.
You think I learn all this? I cannot learn all this because of the cultivation. From the cultivation, all this understanding manifests. Then my nature actually inherited from the spiritual nature. So all this past cultivation come back to my nature. That's why I can understand a lot of things. Then I can see the sign, everything. That's why when I share and I teach, I become very different. Sometimes those who can sense me, they know the energy become very strong. It's like another being inside there saying things. It's from the nature, straight from the heart. Especially at a retreat, you go through, you will know. So all this is part and parcel of cultivation in the way. That's why you are just going through now. And you haven't really inherited your past cultivation yet. Because maybe you don't have much to inherit. This line you learn the most. You have to learn a lot more. Then this bodhisattva way will take you through to a lot of this type of cultivation that you will continue to develop understanding. Then you have gratitude, faith. Then you make aspiration. Then you will start to accumulate your spiritual nature. Perfect your spiritual nature. But this is like a cultivation process to develop what they call like your karmic nature. When you cultivate following the advice of the Buddha, you develop perfection of the karmic nature. Then you will have a very beautiful karmic nature to support you whenever you come. But spiritual nature is about perfection of parameters. Perfection of virtue, perfection of wisdom, understanding, exposure, and all those things. So all this will actually contribute towards your spiritual nature. It's just like how you build up your karmic nature. You will build up your spiritual nature with all your perfection and all the whatever things that you do. When you come as a form and mind to cultivate the bodhisattva vow, to fulfill your vows and all those things, to go through all this, what they call exposure, like the Wuliang Yi Jing, all the sharing, the numerous meaning of Dhamma and the wonderful Dhamma that we are going through now. This is unending, the scope. It's unending. And these are the limitless wisdom and understanding that you can go through, cultivate and perfect. And this is what you need as tool when you come to do this work as a bodhisattva. Otherwise you cannot go. How can you share and teach if you don't have this type of understanding and nature? Dhamma alone is not enough because the world is so complicated, so complex. So full of things that people cannot understand. It's not only the materialistic, the mundane, but the super mundane itself is a lot more. And that field, the awareness, the consciousness, is very, very deep and a lot. That's why you have to go through all the training, the transformation, the understanding, you have to perfect them. Then only you can have that type of nature to share and to teach. So what you are going through is just the initial happening, the superficial. That's why you will go through all this, and as you evolve, you become different. Now you still have this thought there, I won't say it's condition you, it's like you will still go and think, like just now you described, it's not to say you are curious or this thing still there. But later on, after you went through all this and go beyond all this, then this type of thought disappear, completely disappear. You just continue to cultivate and move. Then you will develop understanding like what I used to share with you. Don't try to know, just do. Develop the faith, the sincerity, persevere, and just do. Then the cultivation become very straight. Yeah. Because now you have actually slowly progress and develop the ability to transform. But there are still a lot of things that you have to go through to develop understanding. Which will happen. It may take time, but no problem. Because if you look back, for me, I have this style of nature. When I connect, it was 1989 until the year 2000 is about 11 years. Oh, 20 years, not 11 years, sorry. Then 2000 until now, 2022, another 22 years. So total 31 years. Oh, sorry, 33 years. 33 years, this nature has moved and transformed and evolved to become what it is today. And it has inherited the understanding and all those things, and it has evolved all this understanding to share and to develop all this condition for the Dhamma to flow, to manifest. So all this is not easy. And this 33 years, you may think it's only 33 years, but I started at the time 1989 when I have my past, everything which I inherit, and I develop all this. It's not easy. Normal people cannot do. And I was very lucky. That time 1989, I was 35 years old. That's why I had the luxury of time. Even now 68. 33 years, yes. Let's say I live until 80. Maybe like the Buddha, you have 45 years. So 45 years of this type of movement and evolution, it is not something ordinary cultivator can develop. That's why all this, you will start to have an understanding. Then you will rejoice. You will have a lot of gratitude. That's why in the early day, I did give some hint to people. I say, one day when Kayamita come to know what this nature is, you will get a shock of your life. So all this is what causes and conditions are. You have the golden opportunity, this golden window of opportunity, this golden age, golden era. You should make full use of it. You should commit yourself and develop this understanding, take the vow, and stabilize all this, plant the seed of Bodhi, and move. Then later, not one life, two life, many life, maybe until the next asana, you will understand all this. You will become very different. Okay? Yeah? Bojang? Sadhu?
Yeah, thank you, Brother Teo. Yes, I agree. So we must actually take opportunity to cultivate.
Yeah.
You know, Brother Teo already cultivated 33 years. For me, it's just 1+ years. So cannot compare, Brother Teo.
I want you to understand what you are going through is just the initial beginning. You have to go through a lot more to develop the understanding. But this life, because the condition is there, and your faith, your sincerity, and also your past together, they actually help you. Then you must make full use of it, determined. Like you mentioned last time, the urgency and all those things. You contemplated on death. Then that one set you forward. Then now you have the condition. You must continue to determine, to move, to cultivate. Then life after life to have this type of understanding. Then you can plan your future coming. You can make aspiration vow. Then you can actually do all those things to break whatever coming obstruction that you have to break. Then from there, the cultivation will become different. Everything will become like smooth sailing, like meant to be by itself, it moves. Like I used to share with you, this life, my nature didn't do anything, it just come, echo and flow, and everything fall into place. Then I get to live life, like the Heart Sutta say, true emptiness is wonderful existence. So this is wonderful Dhamma, wonderful existence when you develop understanding. Okay, we better end. Later.
Yes, thank you, Brother.
So let us rejoice and thank Pocheng for the good sharing and the condition to arise all this sharing. Sadhu.
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 Sadhu.